This is probably a very good time to introduce our other guest, Barry, and that's Julie Cower. She's from Brown University in the US, and she's been working on some of these mechanisms. Hello, Julie.
Hi.
Now, you've been studying actually some of the connections that happen in the brain. Tell us what you found.
Well, let's see. Briefly, there's been a growing theory in the field of people who study cellular changes that occur during addiction that the changes that occur in the brain are somewhat akin to those that occur with learning and memory. And so there's over the last 10 years or so, there's been a growing number of research papers looking at this problem and trying to see whether or not indeed, the changes that occur in parts of the brain involved in, say, dopaminergic function, as Barry was just mentioning, may be similar to those that happen in parts of the brain involved in learning and memory.
So in the same way as you learn your maths homework or something, you also learn to take drugs?
Well,
so what's the reward then in doing your maths homework versus the reward you get for taking drugs? Because drugs temporarily can change your mood, and that's the attraction to most people of using them. Whereas learning a memory, you know, what's the reward?
It's a little more complicated than that. So we don't. It's a more basic mechanism that is similar between the two processes. It's not simply a learning to be addicted to a drug because it's rewarding, whereas you may not find math to be as rewarding. Instead, the changes that occur during learning are a strengthening of the synapses, which is the connection between two neurons. And there's considerable evidence that during learning, what happens is that the synapses, the connections between cells, become stronger in parts of the brain that subserve memory. However, in the parts of the brain that subserve addiction, and as Barry mentioned before, the reinforcement to natural rewarding stimuli and things that are important for survival, the strengthening of those synapses that occurs by drugs of abuse may have pathological effects on the system that actually directly tap into long-lasting maladaptive changes in that circuitry. So it's not that the same circuits that you're learning with during your math homework are altered during your use of cocaine, but rather it's a different part of the brain in which maybe these changes in synaptic strength are not appropriate and are perhaps even beyond what should normally happen with normally rewarding stimuli.
So when we learn something, you have a connection between nerve cell A and nerve cell B, and that connection can be strengthened or weakened, and that's the learning experience. So how are you proposing that drugs of abuse, addictive drugs, can affect that process? What's going on?
Well, we found two things. So first of all, there's considerable evidence. So the neurons that release dopamine, which are seem to play a key role in early responses to drugs, certainly, those neurons can be controlled by excitatory inputs onto them or inhibitory inputs onto them. And there's a lot of evidence that a single exposure to a drug of abuse, and this seems to be multiple drugs from ethanol to, from alcohol that is, to cocaine, all produce a strengthening of the excitatory synapses, which then would drive those dopamine neurons to fire more frequently and for long periods of time, which may contribute to the early effects of drugs. The other way that you could increase the firing and activity of dopamine neurons would be to reduce inhibitory inputs onto them. And what my lab found was that a normal process that seems to occur is potentiating of those inhibitory circuits. And this may exist as a way to sort of balance the potentiation of excitatory synapses in the normal healthy brain. But what we found, intriguingly, was that if an animal was given morphine and then we looked 24 hours later, we found that this inhibitory potentiation was completely absent.
So does this mean that potentially one exposure to one of these nasty agents could have lifelong consequences?
I don't know the answer to that question, and we're very interested in finding it out. Clearly, the work that my lab's been interested in can only really speak to initial effects of drugs, and very clearly, in most cases, a single exposure to one of these drugs does not produce addiction. However, it's possible that taking the drug even once sets the stage in a way for the vulnerability issues.
And just very briefly to finish off, Julie, given that you found this new mechanism or you're uncovering this new way of thinking about how addiction occurs, you've therefore got now another way to think about how to break an addiction. Could we block this process and therefore treat people who have an addiction to various drugs via a new way?
Well, the work that we have carried out has pinpointed a single molecule in the this dopaminergic brain region called guanylate cyclase. And what seems to be, what may be true is that if we were to modulate this drug target at the same time that an addictive drug like morphine were delivered to a person, that we might be able to ameliorate any addictive properties of the drug that would develop over time without affecting its analgesic effects. And as morphine is given frequently in the hospital all the time, this might be a useful process. We don't know whether or not targeting this molecule, however, would be able to reverse addiction, which is, you know, clearly a very persistent problem.
It still sounds like a very fertile area to look into. Julie, thank you very much. That's Professor Julie Kaus. She's from Brown University. And if I could just come back to you very briefly, Barry.